Do you believe in miracles? Have you ever felt that you really, really needed one? If you're like me, you learn best, or maybe a better phrase is remember best, through hearing stories. There are two common types of stories in the Gospels through which we get to know Jesus' teachings: parables and miracle stories. Our second reading, which is frequently referred to as the story of the woman with a hemorrhage or the woman with an issue of blood, is an example of the miracle stories in the Gospels, and it's one of my favorites. For me, it captures the very essence of faith. It resonates with my experiences of dark times, and it reminds me that I must actually take action on my own behalf. I must reach out for healing. I must reach out for God, and I must be open to the touch of the divine. As I prepared this talk, I found myself consulting another favorite book, James Autry's Looking Around for God, and I found the following gem in his chapter entitled Preach the Whole Story and Treat Me Like a Grown-Up. This is something, by the way, that I think Swedenborg's theology does. It asks us to behave like grown-ups, and it treats us like grown-ups. Stating that biblical scholarship is a form of worship, Autry goes on to say, Jesus was saying that when the rules, the code, the law get in the way of mercy and love of one's fellow man, then we need to re-examine those rules. And to me, this was a very timely reminder this week following the Supreme Court decisions, voting rights, DOMA, Proposition 8. As a Christian, Autry went on, I want to be treated like a grown-up. I can take it if I hear something that's different from what I've been taught all my life, and I think most other grown-ups can too. The father of an autistic son who has been an advocate for disability rights for many, many years, Autry advocates giving those miracle stories a little rest, saying they don't do a lot for Jesus' credibility. If you focus on the idea of a Jesus who heals some people and not others while professing to love everyone equally. So let's engage a little bit together in Bible study. Let's ask what the meaning of this story can have for us today. This is one of the stories that's found in all three of the Synoptic Gospels. It's in Matthew, it's in Mark, and it's in Luke. It's noteworthy that this is the only story in all of the Gospels, all four of them, of a woman who seeks from Jesus a miracle for herself. One might consider her an example of an empowered woman, although that would not have been a virtue in Jesus' time. I selected the version from Mark's Gospel as it is believed by scholars to be the oldest of the three, and that Matthew and Luke's versions are derived from it. In all three Gospels, this story is sandwiched between the two parts of the story of the healing of Jairus' daughter. And in each Gospel, the essence of these two stories is the same. There are small differences in the details, and these differences are used by scholars to try to understand the intended audience for each Gospel and the nature of the early Christian communities which were their target audience. And as is so frequently done in short messages, I'll invite all of you to read each Gospel's version of the story with this in mind and see what you may find in that. So what are the facts? What are the story elements that are preserved in all three versions of this story? First, the woman suffered for 12 years from hemorrhages, presumably a very female disorder, an illness that would make her ritually impure. Two, the encounter takes place in a public, outdoor, open space where an unaccompanied woman was not usually found. She has no one acting on her behalf. Typically, that would have been a male family member interceding on her behalf, as Jairus does for his daughter in the surrounding story. She approaches Jesus from behind. She touches Jesus' cloak or clothes, and in both Matthew and Luke, the fringe of his cloak is specified. Jesus calls her daughter. Jesus tells her her faith has healed her or saved her. The Greek word can be translated either way. And finally, she has no name. Traditionally, this woman's plight is described that one simply, it makes her ritually impure, and thus she is an outcast from her family and from society, according to the regulations in Leviticus. Recognizing this fact, however, it's also good to keep in mind the observation of one scholar who observes that many sermons claim incorrectly that by touching a woman suffering from hemorrhages, Jesus violates purity laws or social taboos. First, and this is obvious, Jesus does not touch the woman. She touches him. Second, hands do not convey menstrual impurity. And the point of the healing, this scholar emphasizes, is that Jesus restores a woman to health and to ritual purity, not that impurity, which is a natural part of the world order, is evil. The purity codes of Leviticus are not set aside. Jesus cleans people of impurities. While it's often assumed that this healing miracle contrasts impurity codes and Jesus' liberation of women from them in this case, it's actually more likely that the contrast is between sickness on the one hand and miraculous healing based on faith on the other. For me, one striking thing is that Jesus apparently has no control over his healing power. The woman is able to sneak up on Jesus from behind and basically steals her healing. She doesn't ask. She sneaks up on him from behind. What audacity. I'm not sure I'd have had the courage to do that. The guts. How must she have felt to do that? A woman alone in a public place. How desperate must she have been? Grasping at fringes is the phrase that came to my mind. Without hope, if this action doesn't work, there's nothing left for her. I see her approaching Jesus very quietly, creeping up behind Jesus, tentatively reaching out her arm, her finger perhaps extending from what is undoubtedly a shaking hand, just barely brushing the fringe of Jesus' clothes. And immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Can you imagine how she must have felt at that moment? Relief? Awe? Joy? I see her as hoping to steal away as stealthily as she came, inwardly rejoicing at being healed, wondering, hoping to be alone to, as we would say today, process what had happened, and praying that she hadn't been noticed. However, this was not to be. Oddly enough, in Matthew, there's nobody else mentioned in this case. It's in a crowd, but there's only conversation between the woman and Jesus. But in both Mark and Luke, she is forced to be public. Mark's gospel says that Jesus was immediately aware that the power had gone forth from him. He turned and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" Can you believe this? The disciples couldn't. They couldn't believe Jesus noticed a touch when he was surrounded by a large crowd of people pressing on him. Can't you just see their faces as they wonder, how could Jesus possibly notice someone touching his clothes in this crowd? It is kind of unbelievable. Well, the woman realizes she's been found out. Our text says she, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling. I'd be fearful and trembling too, and told him the whole truth. This woman, who had hoped to remain invisible, who has no name, becomes a public witness for Jesus' healing power. And in each of the three Gospels, Jesus then says, "Daughter, your faith has made you well." Jesus calls her daughter, a term that embraces her and restores her not only to physical health, but also to her place within the community. Do you believe in miracles? Have you ever felt you were so desperate you were grasping for fringes? In 1866, Swedenborgians achieved salvation by publication, and this is an example of it. In 1866, a Swedenborgian named William Bruce published a commentary on the Gospel according to St. Matthew. There is no one for Mark, not such a book for Mark, but remember the story is in all three Gospels. In it, Bruce notes that this miracle story is extremely interesting, not so much from the nature of the woman's disease, as from her confidence that so great was the healing virtue which proceeded from the person of Jesus that she had only to touch the hem of his garment to be made whole. Bruce explains that the hem of Jesus' garment represents the simplest truths of faith and the plainest precepts of life. The lesson we may draw from this is that whoever takes hold of the lowest truths of the word, if his faith in the divinity be sincere, shall receive from the Lord saving virtue sufficient to restore him to health and bless him with happiness. Bruce continues, noting that the woman approached Jesus from behind, which indicates that she had a deep sense of unworthiness and an obscure perception of the Lord and a desire to come into his presence as the object of his love and mercy rather than of his wisdom. She touches Jesus' garment and is healed. She receives internally what previously she had only received externally, and they become one. Jesus turned to her and saw her. And Bruce notes that when the scriptures speak of the Lord seeing anyone, they mean that the Lord's wisdom or truth enters into that person's understanding and gives an internal perception of the good which is inspired by love of God. Through touch, the woman was healed. Touch is the sense which Swedenborg states is properly belongs to conjugal love. It is the sense proper to marriage, marriage of people to each other, and the marriage of good with truth. It is the most intimate sense, the one that brings us closest to a loved one and closest to God. Do you believe in miracles? Both of our scripture selections this morning are illustrations of a person reaching out for help, asking for it in the case of Daniel, and literally reaching out for it in the gospel story. And in both cases, the persons received help. They were touched by holiness. The woman with an issue of blood reaches out for the fringe of Jesus' clothes and is healed. She can accept God's love and wisdom for herself and act in accordance with God's love and wisdom because Jesus turned and saw her, because she is adhering to the simplest precepts of the word. As Doug explained earlier, Daniel experienced an overwhelming vision and was afraid. He says, "Because of the vision, such pains have come upon me that I retain no strength. And the one in human form touches his lips and says, 'Do not fear, greatly beloved. You are safe. Be strong and courageous.'" The lesson is clear. We need divine help, help to strengthen us. And we need to claim enough strength and enough courage to act as if of ourselves, to ask for help, recognize help, and accept divine help, that touch of holiness when it comes. When I'm honest with myself, and that is often a rather difficult thing to be, I can recognize many times when I should have, could have, would have asked for help. Rooted in my habitual behaviors, I take the acting as if of myself part of our theology just a bit too far sometimes. I forget to ask for help. I forget to do and pay attention to the small things, the touching the fringes of the garment, the actions that will open me up to the Lord's influence and love. The stories of healing touch remind me of the strength that comes from doing the smallest things of faith, of looking around for God's presence in my life, and the healing that comes from that practice of looking around for God. All of you know that Swedenborg says in Heaven and Hell, "The only way we can be formed for heaven is by life in the world." If I accept this, I must recognize that as I go about my daily endeavors, I'm surrounded by angels in training. And one of the exercises that I really like to bring that awareness into my mind is one we did at the 2013 Memorial Day retreat. And it was identifying an angel in your life. The instructions for that exercise are really rather simple. Think of someone, you can close your eyes and think of them now. Think of someone who you recognize as an angel in training. And try to think about how you know that. The exercise was introduced on Friday night of the retreat at the welcome gathering with the invitation that maybe some of the angels in training were actually at the retreat that weekend. As part of our closing ceremony, some of us shared our stories of angels in our lives. And as many of you know, I had surgery on my left foot at the end of April, and I'm only just now getting back, well, on my feet and able to wear normal shoes. Hello, normal shoe. All through the weekend of the retreat, I was helped by all the other participants in ways that were just in time, respectful, and caring. Boy, was I aware that I was surrounded by angels in training. And in seeing them as angels, I realized I was experiencing a miracle. That if I just looked, I could see angels all around me. So yes, I believe in miracles. What miracles are there in your life? Amen.